This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have one sponsor for the show, and that's our good friends at Jamf Software, makers of the Jamf Pro management suite for Mac, iPad, iPhone, Apple TV, and everything else. Bradley, this is a week you want to have a Mac management solution, is it not?
Yeah, it is. I'll be solved by the time this show comes out, but the big macOS High Sierra security flaw was discovered yesterday, allowing root access without a password, was patched today in a very quick turnaround. But obviously, if you have a Mac MDM solution, it is a much faster fix. Now, this may actually give some weight to the idea that you should wait, you know, quite a few minutes before you update.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but on the flip side, I don't believe that Sierra or Blow got the Wi-Fi fix for the crack vulnerability. So it's kind of like, you know, it's what do you do? But again, it's a pretty quick update, and it was a silent update. What I understand is going to be installed whether people want it or not, and doesn't even require a restart. So it's very, very nice.
Yeah, the problem is over, but somebody in California has not had a lot of sleep in the past 36 hours, that's for sure.
No, they have not. But we'll live on and fight another day.
Yes, indeed. So I have had a number of sagas in the meantime, Bradley. In particular, the smart keyboard on my iPad Pro has been acting very weird over the past couple of days.
Is that your original one?
Yeah. So I got the second generation iPad Pro, not immediately it came out, but a little bit after. But I kept the original smart keyboard, obviously, because that hasn't changed. But in the past couple of weeks, weird things were happening. Like you'd be typing, and then it would just stop. And one time, I got that, you know, the message that says this accessory is not compatible with your iPad or whatever. And there was nothing plugged into the iPad, nothing plugged into the Lightning port. Only the keyboard was connected. So I hit the Genius Bar. I got a replacement keyboard, so I've got a brand new smart keyboard here, which in some bizarre way is actually worse than the one that was broken. This one just randomly completely stops working. No typing required, no nothing. It just, you know, you connect it and it will not do anything. So back to the Genius Bar, and they're now going to, once they get a part, they're going to replace the whole iPad, and we'll see if that sorts the problem. So
they're actually going to replace the iPad now.
Yeah. And at least one person on Twitter told me that they had had the same experience where they had they'd had the keyboard replaced and that didn't solve it, and then they replaced the iPad and that did solve it. So there's maybe a question mark over some of the smart connectors in the newer iPad Pro. Not sure.
But well, and that is very frustrating. It'd almost be better if it was an iPad issue, because if it was like, hey, after 2 years, these things seem to start to fail. Now, I mean, to me, the material that the smart keyboard is made out of doesn't seem to be like the most durable, as they would say.
Yeah, I mean, the one that the original one I had replaced, which I'd used pretty much every day since I got it back when the iPad Pro first came out, it was still fine to type on. It was starting to kind of fray a little bit at the edges. You know, the top and bottom was starting to come apart a little bit on the corners. But it was okay, you know, that's a year and a half. But I mean, you know, that is a very expensive keyboard, and you should really not be talking about it sort of partially falling apart after just that amount of time.
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll get that resolved. And but what is your other saga?
Yeah, my other saga is I'm debating buying a new Mac, believe it or not.
Fuck, we've come full circle. have you told your other co-host Federico on Canvas about this? Does he know?
We're going to have a conversation about it. But
I mean, I assume he'll be disappointed in you.
Well, I'm going to deflect the blame. I'm going to judo that onto Google a little bit, because one of the things that I've been struggling with in the past couple of weeks is that I've been doing a big job in school. We use Google Docs a lot at school, and the Google Docs apps on iOS somehow get worse with every revision rather than better. I don't know what it is, but now I've got things like, you know, in the Google Sheets application, I can't type in certain fields. You know, just all kinds of weird stuff. And there continues to be just basic limitations in that app that are sort of slowly killing me, you know. And I mean, it's not like I have no Macs. You know, there's a Mac Pro at school that I sometimes use, but at home, my sort of emergency Mac that I hide in a bottom drawer is a 2010 11-inch MacBook Air. So that was always kind of my escape hatch. If I really needed to do something that wasn't possible on the iPad, I would always pull that guy out. And the problem with that is that Mac is now so slow and old that it's not even really working as my escape hatch. So I'm debating, you know, do I just upgrade my emergency Mac one time and maybe, you know, 5 years or 6 years use on that machine or whatever. So I'm thinking about it. I haven't done anything yet. Maybe Google will hire a whole new iOS development team overnight and rewrite all their apps. But that's one of the big problems for me right now, is that the Google experience is just so bad on iOS now. It's very, very difficult.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about this because you and I have been talking about this offline. But like over the last night or yesterday during the day, as I redid our staff page on our website, and just upended it and redid it. And I was thinking when I was doing that, obviously I was using my MacBook Pro, how terrible of an experience that would have been on the iPad.
Yeah.
And I really still go back to most of the failings of the iPad as your only machine don't revolve around apps being terrible, but they revolve around mobile Safari. For as great as it is and the great as it was, the reliance on apps has hurt mobile Safari, I think, in a way. So imagine if, like, there was a different world where the apps sort of didn't exist and mobile Safari and web apps were still a thing.
Yeah.
Like, how good would mobile Safari possibly be? Hmm. Now, I don't know. Some of this, I think, is the failings of touch, where you need a mouse cursor.
Mm-hmm.
But then some of it is just websites not working well with mobile Safari. I was needing to do something on a Wufoo form the other day, and their website was so bad I needed the desktop version, but then I couldn't even hit the button for desktop version because it was hidden under a status bar. So I had to download iCab, and the request desktop button didn't work. And I had to download iCab, and then it was able to force it, and I was able to do it. And I don't know what the answer is there, because that's an iPad failure as much as it is an app failure from Google. You know what I'm getting at? You should always have the option to be like, you know what? I'm going to open up Safari and do it in here. And I really would love to see the ability to do a cursor on the iPad, like a mouse cursor on the iPad. I know you people are going to think I'm crazy. I'm telling you. The precision of on large-scale documents, the precision of a mouse pointer, to me, is more precise than touch.
Well, I've used certain applications on iOS. Like, you know, we use the Google Workspaces client on iOS in school. And it has a kind of trackpad mode where you can, if you move your finger in the lower left corner of the screen, it will basically, you know, act like a mouse for the cursor, you know. And I've said this before, I think maybe on an episode of Canvas a while back, we were talking about should there be like a desktop emulation modes for Safari? You know, like, why is it that I can't just log into, you know, drive.google.com in mobile Safari and get the exact same experience as I can get if I was on, you know, a MacBook Pro or whatever? You know, because it's not a hardware problem, right? The hardware is as capable as the hardware in, say, a 12-inch MacBook. So what is it that's holding us back here? And in some ways, you kind of wish like there was no way that the web applications could detect that you were coming from an iPad, because quite often you're just like, and you remember when the iPad first came out, the whole thing was you can use the desktop web, and then web designers figured this out and they just broke everything by trying to make mobile versions of stuff. You know, if you look at, say, like the mobile version of the Gmail web client, it's pathetic, right? It just doesn't have the features that you need, you know, and trying to get them to work otherwise is extremely difficult. So, you know, to me, I think you're absolutely right, Bradley, that, you know, okay, the Google apps are terrible, but that in some ways, like, Google shouldn't have to have an iOS development team just to be present on the platform when this platform supposedly has Safari as in all but name. And I think that, you know, this to me is one of the kind of big frustrations on iOS is that mobile Safari is weak. And it's not getting better quickly enough, and the Google apps are not—they're actively getting worse. Actually, believe it or not, you know, I'd rather go back to sort of early iOS 10 days and have the version in Google Docs that I had back then than what we have right now. But we are where we are, right? And at some point you sort of look at it and go, well, I can't just sit here and not get my job done because I've got the wrong kind of computer, you know, and we're too far into Google Docs to say, well, oh, let's switch to iCloud collaboration or something like that, you know, which is such an immature model. So that's where I find myself right now with some of the development work that I want to do for school, is that nothing in my life is really satisfactory for that. I've got a nice, powerful iPad, but the software is terrible. I've got all the software I need on a very weak and old Mac, you know, so what am I going to do here? Tell me what's
happening. I don't know. So I was talking to somebody about this today. They were saying, like, you know, what's the bad? I need to get a computer for X. And the problem with that is like buying a car. Yeah. Is you first, when you're buying something like the computer, a car, house, etc., you first, before you decide anything else, what is your budget?
Yeah.
Because if you tell me, like, hey, my budget for a computer is like $2,000 or $1,000 or $500, that's just drastically different experience. So if you said my budget is $500, I'm going to tell you to get a Chromebook.
Yeah.
You said my budget is $1,000. It's like, I'm probably going to recommend you the MacBook One. It's a really, really solid machine. Because it's like the $1,100 iMac to me is really, really slow. It's got a spinning disk hard drive. Mm. It's just not very good. Not going to be very fast. It's not going to last as long.
And it's not even Retina, that one.
No, it's not. And so it's difficult. I mean, like in my house, like there are advantages to having a Mac that's always on. You can do some things with Hazel. You can do some fun things. Like it is nice to have a Mac that's always on. Well, on the flip side is, then you, especially if it's an iMac, you must have a place for a Mac that's always on.
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, gosh, I want to get an iMac. It's like, okay, how much storage do you need? And it's like, okay, well, you know, do you need something that's going to be able to download your entire iCloud photo library? You know, like you and I were talking, and to me, you either get a 256 gig storage or you get a terabyte. Like, there's no reason, you know, like, because 512 is probably not going to be enough long-term for your photo library. Terabyte could be good enough for a long time. But if you're not going to get a terabyte, just get 256. So it's difficult. It is difficult. I am probably always going to lean towards portability because, again, knowing you need the you'll use it some for configurator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might lean more towards a 15-inch MacBook Pro or maybe a 13-inch MacBook Pro and an external monitor, like kind of docking solution.
Okay.
That's probably what I would lean to, simply because for me to get an iMac to where I'm comfortable with it, like as a machine I would want to buy, it costs $1,600.
Yeah.
It's the time you upgrade the RAM and you move it to a flash storage.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the pricing in the UK, I think basically any computer that I want is £2,000, right? a 27-inch iMac, a 21.5-inch iMac that's specced up a little bit. There are some trade-offs there because the 27-inch iMac has got user-replaceable RAM, so you can buy third-party RAM cheaper. You can't do that in the 21-inch iMac, so you've got to pay up for Apple's RAM. So that kind of equalizes the price differential quite a lot between those two models. So honestly, I was speccing it out the other day, and a 27-inch iMac with less RAM or the same amount of RAM but from a third party versus a 21-inch iMac with Apple's RAM is basically a £200 difference there. So for that money, obviously the bigger one. But the 15-inch MacBook Pro is interesting, right? I feel like I don't need another 13-inch ultra portable device, right? I've got the iPad Pro. I'm not giving that up. You know, there's so much stuff we do in school, Apple Classroom, Swift Playgrounds, all of the things that we do on the iPad at school. I totally need to still do that, and that's going to be my main. Still going to be my main work machine at school during the day, but when it comes time to do the things that the iPad isn't coping with, I need something that's different from an iPad. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want just basically an iPad that runs Mac OS. I want, you know, bigger screen, maybe more power, that kind of thing. So, like you say, I'm kind of leaning towards something larger like that. So, scared of the 15-inch MacBook Pro though. You know, looking for a long-term machine here, and that doesn't...
Yeah, the keyboard, the fragility of the keyboard. I mean, I had to buy one today or yesterday for somebody at work, and that's the machine. Like, we buy an Air. I'm not buying AppleCare. But like right now, if I'm buying a MacBook Pro, I'm buying AppleCare.
And then you're spending another £350. You know, that's how much AppleCare is. In
$199 here in the U.S. I don't know. That's tough. Yeah. I don't like that the iMac base prices are like, I think like spinning platter hard drives are like the new 2 gigs of RAM. It's like you just can't buy them. Like there's no reason to buy them anymore.
You can spec them up to SSDs. You know, you can go to a 256 or 512 SSD in an iMac, which
it's like 190 though. But the thing that it kicks up the price.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's like and I just feel like they need to like say we don't. Apple should just not sell spinning platter hard drives anymore.
It's almost like the time has come. Yeah, yeah. You got to get that base price. And I'm going to wait till January, and I'm going to wait for a 0% financing deal.
Oh yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah, I have the Apple Barclays card, mm-hmm. credit card, and like mm-hmm. I get those all the time. It's like free. Free financing right now. It's actually a nice deal. I really wish Apple would do like a store card, like our Best Buy has a store card, for mm-hmm. example. And like they run out deals all the time. It's like spend $199, get 6 months free financing. And there's like tons of times when I'm like would like something new, but I really don't want to drop say $300 on it. But I can pay $50 a month for 6 months. Like that hurts the budget less. And so I feel like Apple would be smart just to have an Apple Store credit card.
Well, with that Apple Pay Cash, that might be the next step. An Apple credit card right in your iMessage.
True. Before we move on to our topic tonight, I'm going to thank Jamf for sponsoring the show. Again, as we mentioned before, today's the day with this macOS Sierra update that you really are thankful for an MDM. I had Heather come to me earlier with an app that she was relying on that now is no longer supported by iOS 11. It's actually not even on the store anymore. Mm. We were able to find an app, download it, and push it to all of our iPads in about 2 minutes, and it worked really, really well. So that's the kind of things you can do with Jamf Pro. It's the best solution for deploying, managing, and securing your Apple devices. Millions of students are powered by Jamf every day. You can bring learning to a whole new level for your students and teachers, providing the tools they need to be successful in the classroom. Learn more at jamf.com for a free trial. That's JAMF.com. Thanks to Jamf for sponsoring Out of School. So we're going to do our annual Christmas show. We recommend fun stuff that you can give your tech friends or ask for yourself. And so I'll start it out with a book recommendation. It's called Replay. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of this book? Have I talked about this before?
I feel like I know it, but tell me more.
So it's like from the 80s. And so the premise of it is this guy has a heart attack and he wakes up and he's like 18 again, but with all of his memories of his entire life, and he gets to live life over again. And it is really, really amazing. Like there's parts of it that are like more, what's the word, like not safe for work, as I would say, but it's nothing too vulgar. But it is a really interesting premise as he kind of explores life, knowing what's going to happen. Obviously, there's the usual make a bunch of money, things like that. But it's like, how do you impact history? How do you change history? Like, how can you make it better? What would you do? It's an older book they have for, I think like the paperback is going to be $1 or $2. It's really, really cheap. And it's obviously on Audible as well. And so we'll have links to all this stuff in the show notes. But yeah, it's called Replay.
Cool. Well, Bradley, this is almost like a tradition on the show now, but I'm going to run down external batteries again, because always something that is useful. I think maybe less so than in times past, perhaps, where I don't know how you feel, Bradley, but I feel like I always get a day out of my devices, unless I'm doing something like, heavy gaming or something like that. I'll speak about games in a little minute because I'm addicted to two at the moment. But I kind of feel that I get every day out of my devices without any difficulty. But when we go camping or something like that, the number of battery packs that go with us is quite bizarre. So ballpark figures, right? Like how big a battery do you need to charge your phone however many times? And basically, the current iPhones, between the iPhone SE up to the iPhone X, you're talking about between 1,500 and 3,000 milliamp hours for one charge. The iPhone X is 2,716, which I think is probably one of the biggest ever iPhones. And it turns out, I don't know if you've looked at the teardowns, Bradley, but the iPhone X actually has two separate batteries inside it because they folded the logic board over, so it's quite an interesting design inside. But, you know, if you budget for, you know, 2,500 milliamp hours and then you buy yourself a 20,000 milliamp hour battery, you're going to get a good few charges, you know, that would last you 3 or 4 days in the tent, if you like, for your phone at least. And then iPads are, they're between sort of 8,000 and 10,000 milliamp hours. So the iPad batteries are much, much bigger, multiple times bigger than phone batteries. But, you know, obviously you're probably not using your iPad quite as much, say, in a camping situation or whatever, you might not even have it with you. So if a 20,000 milliamp hour battery, you're going to get to charge your iPad Pro twice probably, or 1.8 times or something like that to get it fully juiced. So, and what I've noticed when I've been looking at batteries, I'm not necessarily recommending a particular model, but the Anker batteries are always good. But the capacity of these things is going up and up and up. So 20,000, 25,000 milliamp hour batteries are not uncommon and not unaffordable anymore. And there are much bigger ones that are more expensive and obviously physically bigger as well, but they're available too. But also, Bradley, don't forget the Apple Watch, right? If you're you're camping, you're going to want your Apple Watch charged as well. And what I've seen that I really like is that there's a range of new chargers coming out where it's like a battery pack, but it's got a little kind of resting spot for your Apple Watch on the exterior of the case. So one example is one called the Belkin Valley, which is the battery pack is 6,700 milliamp hour, so it's not a huge battery, but it has a contactless charger indentation on the outside of the battery that you just rest your watch on, and it'll charge your watch and charge your phone simultaneously from that little pack. That's quite an expensive one, but it's a nice idea, and it saves you carrying an Apple Watch cable with you when you travel as well, which is quite a nice idea. So external batteries are always welcome, I'm sure. But even the little slim ones are now, you know, they're giving you a good charge and a half on your phone as well.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, like these products, you know, they generally gonna last you a couple of years. It's worth getting the best one you can, the biggest one you can, and you definitely won't regret it. How far are you getting on your Series 3 Apple Watch right now, have you said?
Easily a day. I'm putting it on to charge at night, and it's like 75% remaining, you know, so I'm still charging it every night, but it's not anywhere close to being done any day.
Yeah, if I stay away from like cellular usage, it's gotta be like at the end of the day, it's like it's 80%. It's incredible. So, yeah, batteries are getting better. That is the case. And you could even argue that an Apple Watch saves your iPhone battery because you're probably unlocking it less.
You're not lighting up that big screen as frequently, for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. My turn. So let me pick from my list. All right. It says probably U.S. only, I'm going to guess. But it's called MoviePass. And this is what I actually got from my father-in-law for Christmas. He loves going to the movies. Movies are expensive, right? They're like $10 a movie here in the U.S. I think depending on where in the U.S. can even be more. It's like $10 a month. I think if you pre-buy for the year, it's a little bit less. But you get unlimited 2D movies at like tons of theaters. Like in Chattanooga, it's all the major theaters. So what it is, you pay a monthly subscription fee, and it's kind of like Netflix, but for the actual movies. You use their app, you buy their ticket, you go there, you print off your ticket from like where you would if you were doing Fandango or MovieTickets.com, and there you go. You get unlimited movies, $10 a month. It is if you have someone that loves movies, it's fantastic. Because this way, like if you're on the fence about a movie and it stinks, you're not out any more money, except for, I guess, the popcorn if you bought it. So, yeah, it's a neat idea. And my father-in-law loves movies. Like, he goes to, I think, a movie a week. And so he's going to love this.
That sounds like a great gift, actually. In the UK, there are some. I know the Odeon chain of cinemas in the UK do a thing called Odeon Unlimited. It's more than $10 a month, I can tell you that. It's more like £18 a month. But it's the same kind of idea as well. So, yeah. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's one that I'm pretty sure I haven't recommended this before, but I've bought it now for a couple of older relatives, and it's a, how can I describe it? It's like a gooseneck stand for your iPad. You know what I mean by gooseneck? Like that kind of creaky metal arm that you bend it and it stays in the position you bend it in, like the old microphone stands. Yeah. So you might imagine a heavy base with a rigid metal pole, and then the top section of that pole is a gooseneck, and on the end of that gooseneck is a clamp for an iPad. And what this is really good for is if you have older relatives who use an iPad, or if you have somebody in your family who has a disability, for example, they can sit in their chair and you can they can use this to sort of position the iPad in front of them, and then they could use it with one hand rather than having to hold it with one hand and use it with the other hand. And these things are not really expensive. I mean, I think the last one we bought was maybe like £30 or £40 on Amazon, and it was from my father-in-law, who he had a stroke a number of years ago and only has limited use of his left arm. So he can sit in his chair and he can use that, and his right arm's perfectly fine, so he can work his iPad no problem without having to support it in some way on a leg or on the arm of the chair or something like that. He can use that stand as well. So those are definitely great gifts for older iPad users in your family.
Yeah, that's actually good. I never thought about that. I never thought about that. That's a great idea. And again, we'll have links for all this stuff into the show notes, so if you want to pick this up. And it's still early in the buying season as well.
Yep.
All right. My next one is the, sockfancy.com. All right. This is going to sound kind of lame. It is a sock subscription. And I think I'm going to tell my wife to get me this. So sockfancy.com is a sock subscription company. And you can get like multiple pairs a month or just one. But they're like really, really neat socks. I've really always wanted to like up my sock game. You know, like have unique socks. Right now I have black and brown and then like, you know, running socks. And I want like more unique socks to wear to work. So like people could see them like, oh, you have neat socks. So the easiest place to do that is at sockfancy.com. So yeah, I think it's like $11 a month. You get one pair a month and it's like super high quality. So you could like run that for a year and be good to go.
I saw Sonic the Hedgehog socks at the supermarket the other day and was like, can I buy them? They might get them for Christmas. But yeah, 90s video game socks are the way ahead. Cool. So my next one, and this is something that I recently got for myself, and it has life-transforming, might be putting it too strongly, right? But it's definitely made me very happy with my desk setup, which is, do you know if you see a really fancy high-end desk and it's got this kind of pop-up thing in the middle of the desk where you sort of push it down and then out comes a column with plugs on it? Do you know what I'm talking about? And you plug in like power and whatever into this column that rises out the desk. Well,
yes.
This is not exactly that, but it's like a socket extension bar, but it's shaped like that, and it sits on your desk like a column rather than a strip that lays across your desk. So I've got one that has got it's got four sockets on it and four USB ports on it as well, and this is total game changer when it comes to, you know, your desk at work. And this happens to me all the time, right? I've got iPad chargers on my desk. Somebody's like, oh, my iPad's a little bit low in charge, can I please borrow your charger? And that charger never comes back, right? So what I now have is I have this this sort of stacked thing of USB and main sockets, and I just have cables coming out of it, and I'm like, oh, well, I can charge it here for you, but I can't give this away because it's wired into my desk. Problem solved. So not only is it compact and space saving, but it also stops people stealing your iPad chargers, which is distressingly common, unfortunately. But you'll know this as well.
Yeah,
I'm
that
sure.
happened quite a bit. The worst is MacBook Air chargers. Like when those are missing, it's like, that's an $80 charger. Come on.
I know. Yeah, I don't even let staff do it. They just do it. But I stopped quite a long time ago giving children chargers to take away. I actually have a couple of battery packs. I mean, this is, you know, back to my obsession with battery packs. That's what I give to children, is I have two quite large battery packs, and I'm like, here, take a battery pack. But even those sometimes wander off as well. So it goes.
All right. It's my turn, right? Let's see here. I'm going to go with Google Wi-Fi. So I've been running Google Wi-Fi for a year now, zero issues. Recommend it to multiple friends. They've loved it. It's very, very inexpensive compared to the other like kind of mesh Wi-Fi systems. I think it's the most inexpensive for the three pack. I really, really like it. You can get a three pack for under $300, or you can start with one that's like around $100, and you can kind of work up from there. But it's really, really good, really, really easy. You know, just kind of haven't had to fool with it. Each access point has one switch port, so you can like plug in, if you have Ethernet throughout your house, you could say plug it in and then plug in another device like an Apple TV or an Amazon Fire into it. But obviously, even if you don't have wired Ethernet throughout your house, you plug in one, you plug up the other ones wherever you have power, and you kind of get a mesh network. Again, no complaints, and it's inexpensive, so probably I would argue the best home Wi-Fi on the market right now.
Is performance good when you're meshing?
You know, it's hard to say. Like, I don't mesh because I have Ethernet though at my house. Okay. But from all the studies I've seen, they are very, very good. They claim they're the best, but I think everybody would. Meshing is hard because it's so going to depend on your environment, and it depends on where you're placing them and what's in your walls. And one other thing I've read, it's fantastic on the meshing, but I've never had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if those are available in Europe at the moment. Between Google Wi-Fi and Eero, I'm not sure if there's really a good solution for that kind of thing in Europe or not. Haven't seen either of them really available. I think the Google Wi-Fi might be in Europe, but not readily available. You know, you can't just get it from Amazon at the moment, as far as I know. But yeah, Wi-Fi right. upgrades are the thing. I think there's clearly been sort of some improvements in the state of the art with home Wi-Fi, and people are starting to recognize them more than just the thing that came from your cable provider is going to be necessary. Cool. My turn. Let me fire in. I'm going to stick with the power again, and I've recommended this before, but I think maybe more people might be eligible to get this gift now, is the Apple 29 watt charger and USB-C to lightning cable, which I have plugged into my iPad right now. Now, this only works for people who have got an iPad Pro of some kind, which is at least 10.5 inches or bigger. The original 9.7 inch iPad Pro doesn't support this, but the current 10.5 Pro and both of the 12.9 generation support this, which is that this charger can charge your iPad faster than any other charger, quite significantly so. In particular, in situations like I'm doing right now, where I've got the Apple USB adapter in, I've got my microphone plugged into the iPad, and I'm charging it at the same time, my iPad is actually gaining charge rather than just losing charge less slowly, which is what I would get if I had a 10-watt charger in. So the 29-watt charger is the same one that comes with the MacBook One, but you just have to put a lightning to USB-C cable on it. That's a separate cable. Now, this is not cheap. I mean, this is I can't remember the exact price, but I think in total you're talking about 80 or 90 bucks for this setup. But if you're a heavy iPad Pro user, total game changer. And in particular, and this is where I use it all the time, is I have one day in the week, Bradley, where I teach 2 hours of Swift Playgrounds. And Swift Playgrounds is really heavy on the battery, you know, so I can get to lunchtime and I've got like 29% left on my iPad, if it was fully charged in the morning, because I'm just sort of running 2 hours of constant Swift Playgrounds animation. So that's, I always make sure I have that charger with me for that day, so I end up at lunchtime with a fully charged iPad instead of a nearly dead one. But that's a great gift for somebody who is struggling for power in the iPad Pro.
My next one is AirPods. I can tell you there is no device that has transformed my music and podcast and audiobook listening more than AirPods, and I absolutely love them. My wife loves hers. She never used her Bluetooth headphones before, but she loves the AirPods. It's easy to charge them. It is easy to charge the case. Case will charge the AirPods up like 5 times. I charge the case like once a week. Just incredible devices. They just work really, really well. It's easy to move them back and forth between your Mac, iPhone, and iPad. So can't say enough good things about the AirPods. $159 is what they cost, I believe.
Yep. And you can sort of easily get them there as well, which was a challenge at one time. I couldn't agree more, Bradley. You know, if you hadn't picked it, I would have picked it, because complete game changer in terms of it's not just that they're more comfortable, or the there's no cord joining them. That's a huge big deal. But also the functionality they've got, you can tap them and you know, double tap them for different actions. And under iOS 11, you can have different actions on each side as well. So comfortable in bed, you know, I fall asleep with them in pretty much every day. Quite often I've been using them at work, and then I've just walked around the school with them on because I forgot that I had them in as well. So as long as the shape works for your ears, and it works for most people's ears, I think, but of course not everybody, a huge, huge thing. And the thing about the case, right, they're always charged, right? They're never dead, because as long as you remember to charge the case, you will have charged earbuds, and they are absolutely fantastic.
All right, your turn.
Yeah, it's my turn, even though I hijacked your turn there. There you go. Another thing for the desk that I've really enjoyed this year is there seems to be a whole new generation of LED-based desk lamps. And I've got one, which is from Tiltronics, I think it is. It's just a sort of generic Chinese brand from Amazon. But these lamps, they're basically like a thin strip of metal that goes vertically and then a thin strip that goes horizontally, and there's a joint between them, obviously, and inside that top strip there are down-firing LEDs. And the one I've got, it has, I think, like six settings for dimming, and it has three modes for color. So there's like a warm mode and a cool mode and so on. And this was very cheap. It was like £25-30, something like that. But it's so kind of minimal and thin and unobtrusive, and it gives a great light on the desk as well. So I'm a huge big fan of these, and you'll find tons of them on Amazon. I like this one because it's got different color modes as well. So in the evening when I'm podcasting, I can put it onto kind of warmer color rather than bright white that you might expect. And big fan of those. They don't produce heat. They don't flicker or buzz or anything like that. This one is just really, really great.
Next one I'm going to say is the Audible gift card. I love audiobooks. Been a big fan of audiobooks for, gosh, you know, a good 13 years now. You can give someone 12 books at a time. Covers them for the whole year. Wow. and it's a great deal. You can email them a gift, and I highly recommend it. If you're on the go, if you're busy, I love audiobooks. If you love podcasts, you'll love audiobooks. So an Audible gift card is one of my picks, and something I'm actually asking for as well.
It's absolutely astonishing to me that we're in the UK, we're now going into like the, I don't know, the eighth Christmas where you can't gift a Kindle book to somebody in the UK. But how is that not a thing? You know, yeah, I know you can do it in the States, but it's never come to the Amazon UK site, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's nice because you can have it set to deliver on Christmas.
Yeah, but you can put a Kindle book on your wish list, but nobody can buy it for you. It's really bizarre. Who knows? Okay, my next one is another desk thing, but it's much more prosaic, which is a box of 100 ballpoint pens, right? You know, two is one and one is none, but 100 is a lot, right? So what I think is really weird about things like this, where you have just an overwhelming number of things, is that you never, ever, ever run out. And it's not like you stop losing them. I mean, I've not still got 100 pens, but I've got this box of 100 pens on my desk that I've had for years. And I still have, I don't know, 30 or 40 of those. I don't know where the rest of them are, but there's always a pen. If you have two pens, then you'll lose them. But if you've got 100 pens, there will always be a pen there. So, I mean, you're talking, what, £15-20 for a box of 100 basic biro pens. But just having one always there is really cool.
All right, my next one is the Apple Music $99 gift card. I hate monthly fees, and this is a way to have Apple Music but not have to pay for it per month. And so it's definitely a little bit cheaper than paying $99 a month, because you save on, it's cheap. You know, just basically pay for 10, get 12 months. And you have to pay taxes. So like when you activate it, you actually get charged like $10 on your iTunes account in tax, which is kind of weird. It's kind of a weird purchase experience. It feels like it should just like be a thing. If you have a family plan, it obviously doesn't work as well. But here's something I learned. If you have the $99 music card applied to your account and you switch to the family plan, it kind of gives you credit back towards the family plan. Because I had that. Sure. I switched to the family plan. And so it works well. But that's a great thing. If you have somebody you're wanting to get something for quick, you can get that at most major retailers, $99, and it covers for a year. It has 12 months on the card.
You're just reminding me that mine's probably about to run out. I got that last year, and it must be quite soon I'm going to run out and flip back to the old one. I don't think I'm going to do it again, because I think we are probably going to go on the family plan as well quite soon. But Apple Music is pretty great, I have to say.
Yeah, it's a good deal on the family plan. My 7-year-old is now listening to his own music, and it was nice to be able to add him and not have to worry about what it cost. It was nice.
Okay. Where am I on my list? Oh, yeah, this is another one for the iOS user in your life who travels. The Apple HDMI adapter and an HDMI cable is a great set of kit to take on holiday with you. I do this all the time whenever I travel. Whenever I go on holiday, I always pack that adapter and an HDMI cable, because Quite often, you know, if you go to a hotel, some of the hotels in the UK now, what they're doing is they've got like a built-in TV in the wall, but on the desk below the TV, they've got a sort of breakout box where you've got an HDMI socket and a whatever else, a USB socket or whatever, and you can plug your device in there and choose that as a source on the built-in TV, and then you can stream whatever you've got on your iPad or your phone right onto the hotel TV. So it's really cool, and if you have, you've save stuff offline in Plex or movies or whatever. If it's HDMI, then of course it's all digital. The encryption is all there and it all works, and usually all works, and that's often fine. If you don't have that kind of breakout box, you can often just reach behind the TV and pull their plug out and put your plug in, which is why you take the cable and the adapter. But once I was in a hotel where the TV actually had all the HDMI ports in the back disabled. It was really lame. I was like, I can't believe this. The sockets were there, like they were on the chassis and they were functional sockets, but they just didn't work. There's some sort of custom hotel firmware in the TV that was stopping Andy from plugging in their stuff. It's like, that is pretty low, but that's a nice thing to carry with you if you like to sync movies to your device and then have them on a big TV when you get there.
If you get disabled an HDMI port, so we can't have nice things.
Yeah. Who does that?
So, all right. What is my next one? It is the Nimbus Apple TV controller. I really like this. There's not a ton of great games for the Apple TV, mm-hmm. but there's enough that we have two of them, and my son and I, we molded them. We play some games. We have this little football game we play. It's kind of terrible, but it's fun. I enjoy them. I've seen them on sale for Christmas around $25, retail $50, but they have been on sale. So it's the Nimbus Apple TV controller. It's a kind of nice stopgap between getting a full game system.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, so my last one is actually kind of two, but I'm going to do them together so I can sort of compare and contrast, which I mentioned earlier, there's two games I'm completely addicted to, and this is how addicted to them I am, is that they are both on the home screen of my iPhone. That's how bad the situation is now. Both of them, are, basically, I'm like a 39-year-old man playing with digital train sets, right? This is my life now. The two games are called Mini Metro, which is well known and many people know it, and the other one is called Conduct This, which was recently promoted on the App Store, which is where I found out about it. Both are about basically routing trains to destinations to get passengers through a train system, but they're very different in the sense that Mini Metro, you design the track, the stations pop up and you have to connect the stations, and then you can design and redesign the routes that the track takes, which is good fun. It's essentially a sort of tower defense game sort of mechanic where more and more passengers come and you have to keep up with them, and when one of the stations gets overcrowded, that's when your game ends. Conduct This is a little bit different. It's more of a puzzle game because you go through different levels and the tracks are set for you. And what you do is you start and stop the trains and you change the switches so that you route the trains different ways through the puzzle, and you've got to get passengers from the station they start at to the station they want to be at. And you go through the levels and you eventually complete the game that way. I'm hopelessly addicted to both, Bradley. And this is where I'm not getting a day's worth of use out of my iPhone because I am killing that battery playing way too much Conduct This. But those are two great games to give people.
My wife loves Conduct This. Loves it. She played it on the Apple TV, played it on the iPad. She likes to play it on the iPad.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they have it on the Apple TV, but it's easier on the iPad, but she's beaten, like, the entire game. I know. And my kids love to watch her play it. I don't know why. They love to see them crash and all that. Yeah, she has beaten the entire game. Gets all like the new planets and stuff like that. Mm. You can do worlds, I guess. I think there's one that sends you to the moon. It's kind
of
weird.
Yeah, there's a sort of medieval expansion pack you can buy, and then you can unlock the moon as well. The moon is crazy because in some parts of that you can't see the track, so you've got to remember where the track goes, which is insane. But I'm desperate for more levels in that game. I've completed them all, so now I'm going back through and completing them all with 3 stars. That's how good it is.
Yeah, she does. I think she's getting 3 stars on everything.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right. I think my last one is going to be the Sport Loop Apple TV Watch Band. If you have bought an Apple Watch or you have a Series 1, Series 2, and a new Apple Watch Band, I really love the Sport Loop. Mm-hmm. Really, really comfortable. It dries quickly. I like it as well as the Sport Band, but it kind of doesn't look like the Sport Band. I guess it doesn't look like, because everybody has that, so it has a different, different look to it. And it's nice because you can adjust it to the exact place you want it. With the Sport Band, you know, you're limited on where its like kind of holes are to lock the watch in. But this, it's, since it's a like a Velcro type thing, you can get it exactly the place that you want.
Yeah, I might try one of them this year if somebody gets me an Apple gift card. I've only got Sport Bands. I've got two or three now, but I bought those all before, and most of them came with new watches that I bought as well. But yeah, the sport loop looks pretty cool. It's kind of like the Milanese loop, but it's in fabric. Is that right?
Correct.
It does that kind of looping through and then folding back in itself.
Mm-hmm. And like when I'm working out, for example, I have workout gloves on, like lifting weights. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, depending on where I'm at, the gloves will trigger Siri. Like they'll press the crown in. So what I do is I unloop it and push it up a little bit farther on my arm.
Mm, that's cool. Yep. What color have you got?
Black.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, I think that's everything I've got. That's all the games I'm addicted to and all the different ways I'm charging my devices at the moment. Those are things that
I forgot one more. This is a bonus pick that is really, really expensive. Is if you want a time waster for 2018, is pick up a Nintendo Switch. I'd love to buy one, but I would know I'd be addicted to it. I want to play the new Mario game so bad, but I have this addiction to video games, and I would be addicted to it. So buy it for somebody else.
I'm not getting the Switch unless you can get Conduct This on it.
I'm telling you, the Apple TV version is pretty good, though. It's fun with the controller. Pick up a Nintendo Switch for the someone in your life that has too much time on their hands.
Okay, let me throw you in my bonus expensive pick then, which is Kindle Oasis. The new Kindle Oasis 2, which is waterproof, which is awesome. And I take it when my daughter goes for swimming lessons. This is like the most electronics device they'll let you take into the swimming pool before they phone the police on you. So that you can sit in there with the kids splashing about and I can read my book on the Kindle Oasis, which is really great. It's quite like the existing one, except it doesn't have the same, not the existing one, but the older version of the Kindle Oasis, but it doesn't have a charging case. It just has a case attachment like that, but it has this kind of thick grip down one side, and then it has a thin, the rest of it is very, very thin. So it's nicely balanced in the hand as well. And I'm really enjoying the Kindle again. I haven't bought a new Kindle in quite a number of years since the original Paperwhite. So it is expensive, no doubt about it. But the screen is very high res. It's very responsive. It's very fast. And it's got these nice page turning buttons as well, which quite a few Kindles haven't had for a while.
Yeah, I would love to pick up one of those, but I don't read enough to justify it. The Paperwhite's still a good deal if you just need something to get started with.
It does support Audible as well. I haven't really tried that yet, but it doesn't have a speaker in it, so you have to put, it doesn't actually have a speaker jack either, so you have to connect Bluetooth headphones to it, but it can download and play your Audible purchases if you have that kind of Audible sync thing going on with the book as well.
Well, those are our Christmas picks for the year. I'll have links to all this stuff in the show notes at outofschool.net, and we'll have one more show for this year, and then we'll be off for the Christmas holidays, so we'll have one more show. Thanks everybody for listening. I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and my blog is chambersdaily.com.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter, spears.org on the web.
Have a good day, everybody.